Jason Burmis has the power of information.
Today's News Talk.
TNT.
So once again, the headlines have completely altered my monologue. We almost got through the entire headlines over there without me changing my mind. And, you know, I read the whole maybe World War III after the death of the Iranian president. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I saw the hyperbole of Netanyahu accusing the ICC of anti-Semitism. I thought, hey, maybe I'll throw that in. But I'm sorry, when I see Marco Rubio, and I actually agree with even like half a sentence, and he makes sense, I've got to chime in. Now, Marco Rubio actually just told you the truth there. It wasn't on purpose, and he was trying to use it as a smear regarding the 2004 election and the certification of the younger Bush, the fool me once guy, fool me once, can't be fooled again, that guy, against his second cousin on one side, John Kerry. He's also his ninth cousin on the other. He's also his Yale mate and Skull and Bones brother. Now, if you don't remember the 2004 election, I can't blame you. Time of turmoil. Maybe people weren't paying attention as much. Maybe you weren't really that politically involved. But just so everybody knows, nobody, and I mean nobody, wanted John Kerry, but they still wanted him more than George W. Bush. People were fed up with the wars. They thought it was going to be in and out in Afghanistan. They weren't down with Iraq or the expansions. And there was a guy named Howard Dean. If you don't know who Howard Dean is, quick, I'm going to do a quick. Yeah! you remember him now? Yeah! We're going to Ohio and we're going to Kansas. This guy was on the cover of most of the major magazines. He actually called out the Bush administration to an extent no other mainstream politician had on 9/11, okay, and said, what did they know and when did they know it? It was around that time his campaign was completely axed, and he lost to a guy that somehow, some way beat him in a primary when he couldn't get 25 people to any of his events. That would be John Kerry. Now, all of a sudden, John Kerry becomes the front runner in what I believe, yes, in 2004, is a staged election. And the first time that what? We implement the machines on any large scale level. Now, 2004 is the first national election we see these things. By 2006, HBO has a documentary film out there called Hacking Democracy that goes over certain types of software that was found in the machines that caused fraction magic voting. So what does that mean exactly? Well, when you vote once, you think that's one vote. For some reason, they were counting votes like money and through the software changing it. I encourage people to check out Bev Harris and Black Box Voting, both the book and several different works she put out. She's highlighted in that documentary. So a lot of people, when they saw the results and then they saw the exit polls, said, hey, wait, this doesn't make sense. Kerry won here. We want to audit the machines. We want Kerry to challenge this. Kerry didn't challenge a damn thing. Kerry, I know I lost. Great thing. You know, he ran a great campaign. George Bush is in there. And what happens? Kerry behind the scenes is very involved in geopolitics, policy, all the way up to this current administration, where he clearly, over the last 4 years, ran way more of the geopolitical arena globally with the United Nations and beyond. He was one of their czars than Biden ever could. Okay? That's the reality. So I don't like how Rubio framed it. But we should be questioning elections, and we should have been questioning elections the last 20 years, because these machines and these politicians are absolutely corrupt. And you know what? You can't say that on most networks, and you certainly can't challenge the paradigms. You got to be like, you Democrats won't talk about when you challenge elections, and you Republicans are liars, and you just want to overturn democracy. If you're not saying it like that, guess what? You're not allowed to say it. You are allowed to say it here at TNT Radio. So, hey, follow us on social media. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a like. Get us on the Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, and Gab. And if you can, make that donation, 5, 10, 15 bucks. It means the world to us. Big donations to make this organization what? Not just survive, but thrive. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we got Adam Clark bringing the ruckus with the headlines.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Two Republican congressmen have introduced legislation that would extend certain benefits for Americans serving in the U.S. military to American citizens in the Israeli military. Sigh. Here with the story, joining me once again is TNT news producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Adam, what could it go wrong extending these benefits to American citizens serving in the Israeli military?
Why haven't we thought of this before? This is yet again another story that I caught today, and I said, this can't be real. No, it's real. Wow. Hold on to your butts. Leaping headlong into 2024's frenzy of Israel catering legislative activity, two House Republicans have introduced this bill, which would extend credit and employment privileges normally, usually, ordinarily enjoyed by U.S. military service members. We're going to go ahead and do that for you, too, if you're an American citizen serving in the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF. As Tyler Durden's Zero Hedge's Tyler Durden puts it, the latest affront to American patriotism is brought to you by Pennsylvania Congressman and Chief Deputy Whip Guy Reskenthaler, along with Ohio Representative Max Miller. The protections which are sought by the two lawmakers come in stark contrast to how other countries have been called upon to treat their citizens who have gone to serve in Israel's military. But hey, we're America, and we got to be American and do things differently. Reskenthaler said in a statement, quote, over 20,000 American citizens are currently defending Israel from Hamas terrorists, risking their lives for the betterment of our ally, end quote. Furthermore, he says, quote, this legislation will ensure we do everything possible to support these heroes who are standing with Israel, fighting for freedom and combating terrorism in the Middle East, end quote. By introducing this legislation last Friday, by the way, the lawmakers want Americans serving in a foreign military to be treated in, quote, the same manner as service in the uniformed services, end quote. The bill, if passed, would amend U.S. law and extend certain protections to include American citizens who serve in the Israeli military. Those protections include being safe against foreclosure and repossession of rental property, and would also reduce the interest rates of any loans taken out before their service. It would also protect those Americans from default judgments in legal cases and grant them job rights and the employment benefits that U.S. veterans receive. Around 23,380 American citizens are currently serving in the Israeli army, according to a February report by the Washington Post. Some 21 Americans in those military units have been killed in Gaza, while another died in cross-border exchanges with Lebanon. Chances are this is news to most of you hearing this. Many Republicans in Congress have been staunch supporters, you don't say, of Israelis' military actions in Gaza, you don't say, where Israeli forces have killed more than 35,000 Palestinians, leveled civilian infrastructure, targeted hospitals and schools, and also killed healthcare workers and, as Jason was mentioning in the first hour of the show today, journalists. Shortly after the war in Gaza began, Congressman Brian Mast entered the halls of Congress, not waving a Ukrainian flag, but rather wearing a full-on Israeli military uniform. and went on to boast about his boast about his service in the foreign nation's military. Mast said, quote, as the only member to serve with both the United States Army and the Israel Defense Forces, I will always stand with Israel, end quote. While these Republicans are seeking to extend economic benefits to Americans serving in Israel, other countries have taken a completely different stance. South Africa's foreign minister said it would prosecute its citizens who have served in Israel's military once they return to the country. Haaretz reported in March that the French foreign ministry quietly announced it would investigate French nationals who are implicated in possible war crimes in Gaza during their time serving in the Israeli military. And let's see, finally here, a UK-based Palestinian legal center has requested the British government clarify if it plans to prosecute its citizens serving in the Israeli armed forces. Jumping back real quick to wrap this up, courtesy of Zero Hedge in this case, they brought up the fact that U.S. representatives and senators have been tripping over each other to signal their loyalty to Israel. And they remind us some of the other measures that thankfully aren't law yet, including the House-passed Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which would expose colleges to federal civil rights punishment if a student or professor argues that, quote, the existence of the State of Israel is a racist endeavor, end quote, or makes comparisons between the Israeli government and that of Nazi Germany, among other forbidden ideas. Here's another one. Another bill would bar college debt forgiveness for anyone convicted of a federal or state offense, but only those related to a campus protest. And yet another one would defund the State Department, DOD, and National Security Council until Biden delivers more bombs to Israel. So kind of more of the same, but this one's a little ridiculous, Jason. What say you?
I mean, any way to incentivize this conflict in the Middle East is ultimately grotesque. But let's look at the dark humor on this one right now. Recruiting levels for the U.S. military are openly at an all-time low. Instead of incentivizing more people to join our military, we are incentivizing our own citizens who are eligible. In other words, the possibility of being a dual citizen, or in Israeli eyes, essentially, if your mother is Jewish, then you can come over and you can serve with them. Now we're going to financially incentivize our citizens to serve another master, and not just as a dual citizen, but somebody in the military arena. I think that this is extremely dangerous. It shows how far gone this is, but it also really does show the alliance level with the United States and Israel that is not going away. I'm not surprised that maybe France has said that they would look into it. France, very well aware of the type of espionage that Israel is capable of. And in Europe, it's more of an openly discussed thing, the power of the Israeli military and intelligence services. However, you notice that Britain, for instance, has remained mum on whether or not they'll prosecute. I got news for you. Here's the secret. They're not going to prosecute anybody. They're part of Five Eyes openly. There's zero chance. They're posturing politically. So really, this is more of the same. And it doesn't give me any hopes for de-escalation. And it's more of a visual representation of how corrupt the system is globally. And to me, how integral and influential Israel is on the geopolitical scene, especially when we're talking about Middle Eastern policy and Israel's right to do whatever it likes militarily whenever it likes, much like the U.S.
Oh, well, then maybe we have so much in common that this bill only makes sense, right? I mean, why? Let's just do it. Yeah, this is crazy. To be honest, I had no idea about the sheer number of American citizens serving in the IDF. What was that number again? 23,380 of them, according to that report from the Washington Post, which also, by the way, I dug into that a little bit. They say that many of those are dual citizens who are already living in Israel, which makes sense. But this was fascinating. As of November 2023, about 10,000 people living in the United States had traveled to Israel to report for duty with the IDF after receiving draft notices. So we had U.S. citizens.
Oh, we froze up with Adam. Yeah, just a ton of day of storms today. By the way, you know, this is the second freeze up on other people. I'm the one with the tornadoes outside and the storms and the sirens and the warnings. But listen, I can't agree with him more that this is completely insane, absurd. People should be more aware of the dual citizen aspect of Israelis and the United States, and the fact that they do serve in the military, and not just in the military there, the military here, and in units that also partake in online fact-checking, misinformation, and dare I say it, propaganda. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We got plenty to talk about with Matt Baker, AI, Elon Musk, Scarlett Johansson, Copilot, and beyond. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
TNT's Rick Munn.
So while Michelle wiped her phone, Arlene didn't. And Arlene had the full record there. So while Michelle said, well, I don't have those messages anymore, Arlene says, well, I do. So they've been thrown out in the inquiry as well. And as you can imagine, the bitchiness between those two was at nuclear levels during the scandemic. They were an uneasy alliance back then. But of course, Foster's gone. And Michelle is now in the effective First Minister position in Northern Ireland, despite having wiped her phone against legal advice and destroying evidence and misleading the inquiry. She's the First Minister of Northern Ireland. What does that tell you? Anything you need to know can be found within that statement in and of itself.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
And it is now time to beat the proverbial dead horse of Elon Musk with our resident as expert, Matt Baker. I know that we always seem to come around to Elon, but I could not help myself. You weren't here with us last week, so we weren't really able to talk about GPT 4.0.
Right.
Hello, and really what is now a new standard in AI and really AGI. And one of the things that I took note of almost immediately were the creepy similarities to the movie Her. And I remember watching Her. I'm a big Spike Jonze fan. You know, I keep talking about being John Malkovich. I mean, Spike Jonze was integral in the Jackass series, guys. I mean, if I want to laugh to this day, that's what I'm throwing on late night. You're gonna get me barreling over. So I've got great respect for the guy. When I watched Her, you know, now about a decade ago, I felt dirty. I felt sleazy. I felt uncomfortable.
You dirty, dirty man.
It really felt like I was watching a Rob Zombie movie. I remember that same feeling watching House of a Thousand Corpses for the first time and wanting to turn it off, but not
Event
being
Horizon
able to.
For me, Event Horizon was so creepy. Did you see that one? Oh my God.
Yes, I always, I know all about Event Horizon, my friend. But when I saw this and I heard how Scarlett Johansson sounded, I was not aware until recently, and now this has come out, that OpenAI actually tried to get Scarlett Johansson to do the voice. So about 9 months ago, they wanted to tap into the creepy factor. And I had openly, when I first said that, said, hey, they modeled this after the movie Her with an attractive sounding, flirty woman as the demo. And now
wasn't Scarlett Johansson actually the original voice of Her, is what I was led to believe from that article? No.
So she did the movie Her. OpenAI approached her about 9 months ago to be their demo voice, and she said no. Before this information came out, as soon as I saw it, I said, this sounds a lot like her. It has the same demeanor. Yes, her. And the mannerisms. And now it has come out again. That meeting did take place. There may be a lawsuit involved. And getting to the Muskernuts himself.
Oh, I want to weigh on this real quick, though. Oh, God. Because it's just like, okay, so to let your mind wander, okay, I don't know if he's just going for the creepy factor. It's like, you know, this guy's got an AI robot. If you ever see these old robot things where people have that, the guy has the AI, they end up having their own little sex bot. So I think he's really trying to hit on Scarlett doing it. Like, it's just his way. It's like, you know, people will put hot chicks in their movies. So he's not making movies. So he's like, hey, will you be in my AI bot? And so she can come over and talk about it and think he's really cool and stuff like that. But I can guarantee you he's probably got a secret sex bot out there. And if I was Scarlett Johansson, I would be getting very creeped out by this indeed.
So you are bringing forth the conspiracy theory that Sam Altman actually has the Ex Machina Island. And in fact, it has the face and personality of Johansson.
I mean, I would never make a fake Scarlett Johansson, but I can imagine wanting to, you know,
she's over the hill. Let's be honest. A lot of that's makeup and AI post-wall. At this point.
Post-wall. Yeah, but your AI will be always young. Your AI will always be young. In fact, I'm sure they'll probably have a little filter on that. It's like, what? I would like it to have a Madonna porn bot, but could you make 18-year-old Madonna porn bot, please, for me? I don't want to see the ancient Madonna, you know? So, I mean, sorry, but that's just going to happen. And I just guarantee he's got something like that going on. If he couldn't take a no for an answer, and then he thought he was going to be cool by bringing it out and not realize how creepy that was, it's like, you're still a dork, bro.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you want the AI Madonna, you're going to want Material Girl or Like a Prayer. You're not going to want to go much beyond that.
Bonita, you know.
Yeah. You're not anywhere near that. Sorry. Musk chimes in. Now, Musk always wants to be the peak of pop culture. And so he makes a Black Mirror reference to the Scarlett Johansson similarity. Now, listen, as far as AGIs and AI, Black Mirror is a good place to go and start and take a look at how much of that has already come true. I remember that first season.
Great series. Yeah,
amazing. Absolutely great. Well, what are your thoughts on this? Is this more of Elon trying to be hip and with it and represent himself as like the cool AI guy?
Well, I think I would definitely stand up for Scarlett Johansson. I mean, she's a beautiful lady. And if she wants to be the voice of Grok or get on my Grok or whatever you want to call it, you know, come on my Grok, Scarlett, you know, you'll have a great time. Probably put a microchip right in your ass. Anyway, I think, of course, he's all about the daily meme. And that's why I still think secretly he really is Adrian Dittman. And I think secretly he's really not running the show anymore because he's way too up on pop culture. I mean, you and I know we're in the pop culture world. We have to have an opinion on every single thing every day. Like, I've been doing this, editing this video for the last week, and it's like, if I take my eyes off the ball for 5 seconds, I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? You're like, what's happening? You know, it's like, but yet meanwhile, Elon Musk, while he's building his rocket ships and his AI and his brain chips and all that, he just so happens to have time to be completely on the pulse of everything all the time. I don't know. It just seems implausible to me that he has that much time on his hands.
Again, I think that Musk is very much a front for many of these operations. You just mentioned Dittman. I'm not sure if you've seen it yet. But the man or the AI or the something known as Adrian Dittman recently posted a 15-minute video of himself cooking a steak. The only thing I can say from that video is it appears that if it is a real video, because again, AI has come a very, very long way. It is of a white male, I would assume cisgender. I have no idea. We only get to really see the left and right hand, but it got sent to me. And
That's an old video. Oh, I thought there was a new video of him actually showing his face. Yeah, that was like in the beginning of when he was trying to pretend like, oh, no, I'm not Elon. Look, I'm cooking a steak. It's like, okay, that proves nothing. And then he did that weak ass thing where they were on the air together and he's basically talking to himself. That's so easy to do. I could practically do it myself without a voice generator, let alone being able to land spaceships on your ass. I'm pretty sure he has the technological know-how to have a little yak back that says, "Oh my God, I can't believe you sound so much like me. Oh, but I'm not you at all. I'm definitely not you. Oh, I can't believe it." It's like so easy to have that conversation. It could very well be him. In fact, Grok itself says it's a mystery and it could be Elon and it could be AI. So I think he should sue Grok now because he threatened to sue me over questioning his identity.
Well, you know, I tuned into one of those spaces the other day and he was talking about mainstream media and the AI conspiracy and him not being Elon, et cetera. But I certainly think not only are the questions up in the air, after the release of GPT 4.0, it is now apparent that human iteration is about 90% there and completely instant. And not just AI that is speaking words, but can interpret images on the fly, as is also a part of that demonstration. I want to talk more AI and the integration into the Microsoft product Copilot after this. We're going to hit the brakes, hit the headlines, more with Matt Baker after this on TNT.
Now, news.
Big news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. President Joe Biden and his administration strongly criticized ICC prosecutor Karim Khan for his request to issue arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, accusing them of war crimes in relation to Israel's military actions in Gaza. U.S. officials were initially concerned that the helicopter crash that killed Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi could escalate into a larger conflict, fearing Tehran might blame the U.S. and Israel, according to Politico.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
And we are back. Let's talk Copilot. Copilot is the latest AI integration into Windows itself. I'd say it's been kind of beta'd for the last 6 months or so. It's openly now incorporating OpenAI software and this new GPT 4.0 hello, if you want it. GPT-4 has now become free to all users, and there is a premium aspect, but now that is opening up arenas. What are your thoughts on this? Because it seems like the ultimate type of collusion as well. They're not really competing with one another. They're kind of absorbing one another's products. And the thing about these AIs is that they're narrative driven, so they're going to have guardrails on them. That's what's most alarming to me.
Yeah, and that kind of ties into that other article that you were sending me. I can actually tie all three pieces together because you sent me the other article about the guardrails, which we'll get into. But I've noticed what it seems to me is talking to these AIs now is becoming more and more just like a Google search. In the beginning, it seemed like I was really getting something different. I was like, oh my God, I'm getting this information. And I was just doing, I'm just editing this video. I have this leaked video. I can't believe somebody leaked this video to me. But so I'm asking it different questions for research. And it's just like, oh, well, the mRNA vaccines are mostly safe and effective. It's like, hey, what about this? He has not been proven to be involved in anything. And just like everything is just a patented like newspeak. It's all within the guardrails. In fact, it seems to me to be getting dumber. And it's really weird because if you just ask it to do a basic math, it's like, how much is it per dose of vaccine? And it's like, oh, well, it was this many doses. And I said, well, how many doses were there? Can you just divide that for me? It's like, oh, I can't perform mathematics. It's like, really? It seems like that would be pretty easy to do, to just do the division for me there. But honestly, it just seems like it's getting more and more retarded. And then it ties into what you're saying about this. You can get into it here in a minute, be a segue for you. But what they're doing in Europe. Now, I've been calling for there to be rules for AI for years now. I actually have a clip that I found from Alex Jones about 5 years ago that I was calling for it. And Alex Jones was like, this is a great idea. Oh, Matt, you're so smart. But But that never happened. And now basically this new idea that they have is just basically to make it a PC chatbot. There's no limit on how intelligent it is or where it can enter or what it can control, which are the guardrails that should be being put on it. Instead, all it's doing is avoiding mis and disinformation, because God forbid this chatbot might dig up some information on the internet that is not good for the system, which is what it should be being used for if it is going to be alive and well. But no, instead it's just going to be another arm of the system, and it's just going to spit out more regurgitated BS fake news, and it's just gross.
And what's really upsetting and challenging about that is that it is going to be telling you a lot of truths in many arenas. For instance, one of the GPT-4 Hello's demos was walking a kid through a geometry problem. Now, there are a multitude of problems with this, but as long as we keep it baseline, 2 + 2 = 4, you know, AI is going to be very good at walking you through these problems. Now, number one, you're going to have to set parameters on it so the kid can't just get the answer and have the AI do it for himself. Obviously, the parental unit is there. But even when those parameters are set, because it has the inflection and the tone of a human being, and it's constantly regurgitating positivity, positive reinforcements when the child does well, there's going to be an emotional attachment that develops to that AI. And more than likely, that same voice, that same AI is going to be teaching them what? History and other things that are extremely exactly. subjective. And all of a sudden, this student is going to have an emotional relationship. You know, her did a really good job of showing that very bizarre emotional relationship of basically a incel who is not good around people and awkward falling in love with an AI. But it's the children in the education arena that are going to look at these things as authoritative sources. And when we are talking about news, narratives, history, these things clearly cannot be trusted. And we've actually seen that illustrated. For instance, I often talk about the paralegals that were caught utilizing it in case law where the AI just made up cases that didn't exist. Now ask yourself why it did that. First of all, they called that a hallucination. And they did that because it was programmed to think a certain way. And when it was not able to think that certain way, instead it just lied and made something up. Now, if a person had done that, we would call that fraud and criminal behavior. But now there's also a plausible deniability.
Yeah,
exactly. Oopsie. They're always going to be able to point and go, wasn't me. I didn't program it. It's just hallucinating. So even when it gets caught, there's no accountability. This type of AI.
Like Biden, when Biden said he was in, Biden's like, oh, during the pandemic. And they're like, oh, no, Biden's just hallucinating. What he meant was during the recession. So it's okay now. So
you're talking about recently when he talked about during the pandemic as vice president under Barack. Yeah. So he's talking about erectionists too at the same time. All the erectionists out there. Yeah. No, I have to be gaslit by Bill Maher and The View that even though he looks like a literal cadaver, that Maher said, and like Dracula, he's still mentally there and he's still doing a pretty good job. Yeah. The optics
sharp as a tack, Jack. It's Bidenomics. You got to love it, man. Oh, man. Biden is, he's sharp as a tack, man. He's out there every day just crushing it. You know, he's a sight to behold.
Last question, these last couple minutes. We've got Bilderberg coming up in a couple weeks. Looks like it's going to be in Madrid, Spain. Heavy last year on AI. Sam Altman, first time as a Bilderberg member, first time as a Bilderbro. Sam Altman is in this article basically talking about GPT-5 and how much of a leap that's going to be from what we see right now. How long until we see GPT-5, and what are your predictions as to what it's going to be capable of?
Well, like I say again, it's just another manifestation of the system and of the Babylonian Empire that we're dealing with. Like, it's just going to get better. So pretty soon what you're going to be doing is instead of watching me and you, you're just going to be watching perfectly realistic, even coming in clearer than me and making semi-salient points but it's going to be within the doctrine of the New World Order. It will never stray. It will never go outside it. It will give you, it will redirect. It will tell you all the things from Sunday. Like I tried to get this thing in a corner. I'm like, well, what about this? What about that? It's like, well, no, there was no evidence that anything ever came from Wuhan. Oh, there was a weird conspiracy theory. It's like, if you ask anyone in the mainstream news, it's literally one of these chatbots now, and they're going to turn it up. It's going to get more and more and more as it gets more and more realistic and more believable, and people give it more and more power. They're going to slowly dial up how whack it is, and pretty soon it'll be like, of course, there's no such thing as a man or a woman. 2 + 2 = 5. It's really subjective. Some people believe there are 38 dimensions, and it's just going to basically completely fry your brain eventually. It's going to become very, very believable. And make absolutely no sense. That's my
it opinion. Is only going to encourage the post-truth world that we are currently living in. Mm-hmm. Matt Baker, thank you once again. We will see you next week, hopefully leading off with a story on Elon Musk as always. Guys, we're going to take that break. Final segment of the show. We got Zach Payne, aka Red Pill 78. We're going to be talking the trials and tribulations of Trump and beyond. You're not going to want to miss it. Final segment of TNT after this.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're traveling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighborhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Even the thought of dementia can feel scary. It's why we put off getting help, even though we've noticed changes in our thinking or memory. But an early diagnosis can change everything, giving you medical help and a support system around you to help you live better. Start with Dementia Australia's online checklist. Because the sooner you know, the more you can do.
This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Are you looking at me? I don't see anybody else here staring at me. So are you looking at me? That's what the judge said to Robert Costello before he cleared the courtroom of the jury and then the media personalities as well. In an unprecedented move, this was yesterday at the Trump trial. And, you know, I didn't know much about Robert Costello before this, but the way that he spoke to the judge and really tried to put him in his place did put a smile on mine. To talk about that and much more is Zach Payne. So ultimate theatrics in the courtroom yesterday, Zach. We had this moment where the judge threw a hissy fit, didn't like Robert Costello, who is an attorney by trade, questioning his decisions, showing open disgust for him. But I like that sort of thing. Robert Costello's not really beholden to that guy. In an absurd turn of events, and anybody out there that does not think that this thing is an entire circus, I actually posted this on my Twitter, but as they talked about it on CNN, and the pundit who had the IQ of, I would say, a half-dead squirrel. That's about the vocabulary level we were at. Calling it, this is unbelievable, and it's unbelievable. Said unbelievable like three times. What was unbelievable to me is as they ushered the press back in, the two people left standing there were Kash Patel and Chuck Zito side by side. That should let you know everything you need to about this trial and about the post-truth world dark cartoon that we live in. So, Zach, what were your takeaways from the trial? And then we'll get into the wrap-up of the trial today, my friend.
Well, if this was any other courtroom with any other defendant, I would say that the behavior of both the prosecution and the judge was unthinkable, completely unheard of. I mean, it was just so obviously a snow job. Marchand, as a donor to Joe Biden, his daughter working for so many major Democrat political people all throughout Washington, D.C. and the rest of the country. There's no way that he should have been on this case. This case itself should never have been brought. But Norm Eisen did something wonderful for the Biden administration by putting it together and essentially finding somebody who was willing to, at the last second, bring this case, despite how little evidence there was that an actual crime occurred. I mean, it, something like this should not reasonably happen in America. But unfortunately, you know, this is the post-truth world, as you like to say. I mean, this is the nation that we live in right now. And the system that we exist within is hopelessly broken. This is a failed and corrupt establishment that is seeking to destroy a man who is, as far as I'm concerned, the only politician in a position to actually change this system. Now, you may not think Donald Trump is actually going to do that, but he's sure done a hell of a lot more than anybody else that's out there at that level. And he clearly scares the Biden regime to such a degree that they're willing to just completely throw all of the rules out the window and get as blatant as they possibly can. I really like Bob Costello. I thought that the way he handled Judge Marchand was simply brilliant. You know, he's beholden to no one in this case. He didn't need to even come in and testify for Donald Trump. But I mean, he saw Michael Cohen doing something that he didn't agree with. He knows that Michael Cohen is a liar. He understands the type of narcissistic playboy that Michael Cohen is. He's just there to get as many points and score as many dollars as he can for himself. And I think he has an axe to grind with President Trump. So when it comes to debasing himself and lying before the court while admitting that he's a convicted perjurer and having spent time in prison and stole $30,000 from the Trump organization and lied to the CFO. I mean, you can't get much more ridiculous than that. And I think that Michael Cohen was Donald Trump's best witness.
And when you look at Costello, right, and this whole entire situation, the media, at least, you know, the left-wing media continually said, you know, everybody told him, his own team told him not to let Costello take the stand. But Donald Trump, that pig-headed Trump, he wanted Costello up there. And that's what they repeated and regurgitated at 15 and 20-minute clips as if Donald Trump had made the wrong move and he had usurped his lawyers once more. Absolute idiocy. The new talking point today is that the defense has rested their case. And of course, Donald Trump, the coward, refused to take the stand. Now, anybody following this case absolutely knew with almost 100% certainty there was never a chance for Donald Trump to take the stand, because it wasn't about Donald Trump talking about this crime, which isn't even a crime to begin with. Again, an NDA payoff, even if it happened, had nothing to do with election funds and fraud, but somehow they cobbled that together. So the only reason to get Trump on the stage is to be like, you banged that porn star? You did it, didn't you? You know, that would be the whole shebango, and obviously wouldn't have fit his case. Now that it has wrapped up, what are your thoughts, and how far are we going to be away from a verdict?
Well, I mean, closing arguments are 7 days from now. I think it's the 28th. I truly think that Michael Cohen destroyed this case. I mean, as the prosecution's star witness, I mean, he did not do himself any favors. And the fact that they were trying to sneak that $30,000 theft through until the very end and maybe not have it brought up and hope that Donald Trump's legal team wasn't going to bring it up. I mean, that was a revelation. And, you know, I can't imagine how a unanimous jury is going to look at this testimony in its entirety and say Donald Trump committed any crime at all. because there's nothing to suggest that. I mean, Michael Cohen admitted to paying Stormy Daniels out of his own pocket. He admitted to taking the home equity loan out on his home. He admitted that the payments were not specifically for him paying Stormy Daniels. I mean, he admitted to stealing $30,000. That's a much bigger felony than anything Donald Trump is being charged with. And Donald Trump doesn't do his own books. You know, he's got accountants that do that stuff. So I think that we're probably going to end up with a hung jury, because undoubtedly there's going to be a fair number of people on that jury pool that were hardcore leftists who want to see Donald Trump put away. But I just have a really difficult time thinking that this testimony didn't reach through the muck and touch somebody in the brainstem and show them that there's no way that they can have a guilty verdict on this.
Well, that's what I'm thinking he should hope for. Is a hung jury. I would agree with you that, you know, the absurdity is at such a high level if they didn't reach one or two jurors that are going to stand by their common sense and their dignity. That's not a very great thing to say about the New York justice system. If they find him guilty, we know it's going to be appealed. If it goes to a hung jury, at least the rhetoric will be out there that this case will be retried. Whether that eventually happens probably has a lot to do with what we see in the results of 2024, because if Trump gets into office, obviously we will not see this case again at all. Now, the question I have is, at the end of the day, with this case and where Biden is, what does this mean for not only the upcoming debates, right, but the election in general? Because, you know, I'm looking at these debates. Biden himself has set parameters that are absolutely ludicrous. He doesn't want any audience members there. I've joked about it. You know, I'm not one of those guys that says James Woods and Jim Carrey is playing Joe Biden, or Joe Biden is an eternal deep fake, or, you know, all that other stuff. But I mean, you know, in the dark cartoon, what, in an empty room, what would stop them from putting the ultimate Biden hologram 15 feet away from Trump and just running that? And I know that sounds ridiculous, and it's basically tongue in cheek, but we are in this surreal era where we're waiting on a verdict on this one case. There are three cases waiting in the wings. The Assange issue, which is an issue on both ends, has now been successfully punted. Probably won't be asked in the debate if the debates happen. And then the debates aren't even allowed to show how a staged audience would react in real time. So what are your thoughts there?
You know, anything is possible, Jason. I mean, might they pull some shenanigans to just make sure that at least one of the debates doesn't happen? I think that's pretty likely. You know, if they do pull it off, then undoubtedly Biden's going to be on just a whole host of performance-enhancing drugs.
Wait, let me stop you. Did you see Trump literally yesterday says that he's putting it in the clause for a drug test so they can't juice him up?
Yes, I did see that. I did see that. And the White House even failed, or they declined to deny that they were going to give Biden performance-enhancing drugs. They just made fun of Trump for asking about it. And, like, you know, that's not very convincing there. You know, I mean, like, clearly they have to give him something. They're going to have to shoot him up with some massive, like, horse sized uppers if they hope to have Joe Biden on stage, even able to read a teleprompter or to hear what's coming into his ear. So I think that there is a high likelihood that they're just going to have to cancel that first debate. They're going to hope that something will happen in the meantime. And I'm honestly looking to the DNC convention for a possible handing off of the baton. And, you know, right now we're kind of in this, like, you know, nowhere's zone. I mean, like, everybody's like, you know, how could it be possible that Joe Biden is even considering running for president? I mean, he doesn't know where he is half the time. And the numbers are so obvious. I mean, they went to Joe's hometown, Scranton, Pennsylvania, and there was like one person who said that they were voting for Joe Biden. You know, and it's the same in Delaware. It's the same in Detroit. It's the same in Chicago, in New York. I mean, you go to Joe Biden's hometown and the guy can't pull 12 people together, but Donald Trump's going to the Bronx and there's going to be tens of thousands of people there easily. So they have to know that there's no way in hell that this man is going to beat Donald Trump. Doesn't matter what they throw at him. It doesn't matter what dirty tricks they play. It's just, it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, I think they're between a rock and a hard place. And the only option they have now is to pull a Mickey at the last second and put somebody else in there. Maybe Michelle Obama.
I don't doubt that they might have to do something last minute. You watch that video of quote unquote Scranton Joe, and it is people from all walks of life, white, black, young, old, middle aged, and none of them want Joe Biden. Meanwhile, the mainstream media and the pundits that surround it are still trying to hold water for him. Bill Maher. In particular, Bill Maher was just on The View, and despite him saying that Joe Biden was cadaver-like and looked like Dracula when he was challenged on, well, you know, his mind's still there, and he's like, I forget what he said. He did either a pretty good job or he wasn't that bad, etc. But the visuals aren't there. No. He hasn't done a good job. He hasn't run anything. He does look like a cadaver. He can't speak. In the last segment we were just talking about, he was talking about what? Erections and being the vice president during COVID under Barack Obama. That's how far he's gone. Now, again, whether or not they get rid of him before, after the elections, before, after the DNC, whether or not they have the DNC in a live space. They're now floating around the idea of a virtual DNC. It's all up in the air. And that is extremely frightening because here we are less than 6 months from the election. We have no real set dates on debates. We don't know what kind of criminal trials are going to be going on for the former president and the front runner in this. We've got global warfare on a scale we've never seen in our lives. In the last 2 weeks, we've had two major leaders, one die in a helicopter crash that we happen to be a proxy in a military conflict against, and another get shot five times who was speaking out against global governance and the hate and lies shot. I mean, I don't know how much more ramped up it could be. On top of that, Zach, we've got Bilderberg in 2 weeks in Madrid, Spain. Nobody's talking about that. And, you know, the final story we'll hit upon is that Klaus Nutschwab is indeed stepping down as the executive chairman at 86 years young of the World Economic Forum. Now, he will still serve some type of a chairman's role. They don't have another official forum, the big meeting, until 2025. They have not said who they are going to replace him with. But I think that this is more than likely an opportunity for rebranding. So okay, Roll with that for a second. What do you think is going to happen? Are they going to try to give us some kind of a happy face? It's been positive. Maybe they're going to roll out a woman of color so you can't question the World Economic Forum, or possibly somebody that is somewhat popular in the geopolitical arena. What do you see happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a rebrand is well in order at this point. I mean, there is really no positive public sentiment when it comes to the World Economic Forum right now. And Klaus Schwab has been there since the very beginning. So I don't foresee him really letting go of the reins of power. I see it as more of a ceremonial transfer while he gets to remain in the background, still controlling the sort of day-to-day operations and the ideology of you know, their unique brand of stakeholder management, whatever it is they're doing. And he'll be able to do it from the sidelines because, I mean, the man is literally a Bond villain. You hear him talk and you see the things that he wears and you see him on stage and he gets heckled out in public. I mean, he's not a popular figure. So the best thing they could hope to do would be to replace him with somebody who may be a little bit easier on the eyes and perhaps have a softer delivery in their tone of tyranny, if that makes any sense at all. You know, it's interesting is I haven't seen Klaus Schwab since Davos in January. And, you know, there was a rumor going around for a little while that, you know, maybe he had died or he was sick. He was in the hospital. And I haven't seen him make any public appearance since this announcement came out either. So, you know, part of me is wondering, you know, is he stepping away because he is gravely ill? Is there something more going on here? You know, or is it really that he just doesn't want to continue to take the flack that the public is dishing out for him? But either way, I mean, I think it would be a net positive. I just hope that they don't replace him with someone who is twice as bad and who hopes to kind of speed up the timeline of what the WEF has been planning in the same way that kind of Joe Biden did when he moved into 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But, you know, like you said, pretty much all bets are off at this point, Jay. I mean, this is a crazy world that we live in right now. And the one good thing is that the people see it.
Well, I'll say this again. Schwab was such a Bond villain. I'm wondering if they're going to try to slide in the old switcheroo surprise ending villain that worked with the hero the entire time and you thought was the good guy and slides in there, because we are living in a dark, cartoonish graphic novel as we speak. Check him out over at Red Pill 78 and check me out here at TNTRadio.live Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Remember, to this guy, it is not about left or right. It is always about right and wrong. I absolutely love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow night on the flip side.